testing Senate meeting February 17th. To the left, going to the back, making sure it might work. Senate meeting February 17th, going to the right, going back to the front. Senate meeting February 17th, out to the front.
I'm part of testing. I got a bit extra for something. Testing, testing, testing. Is there a line?
Good afternoon. I think you have four coming tables.
I mean, that's what I think gets lost in this. No left, no left.
Great, thanks. So let me call this meeting to order. And our first order of business is the minutes from our last meeting. Are there any changes to the minutes, January 20th meeting? Are there any changes? Hearing none. The minutes are approved as written. Thank you. Let's go on to our announcements then. And I see two things I want to mention just quickly. One is that the Academic Advisory and Research Committee is almost formed now. Should have been, the election ended today for the faculty. And we'll be starting that up very, very soon and getting those folks moving on improving our advising system. So there's that. And then a second thing is we mentioned last semester about posting on walls. This was an issue for at least one department. And having things being taken down on campus, class postings, for example. And I'd asked this group this before, I'm going to ask again, if you have any concerns about that, please let me know. Luigi has talked to me about maybe putting up special bulletin board areas in all the buildings for posting. But that needs to come through us, and he said, what do you think about that, and what do the faculty think about that? So it would require us to only put our class postings in certain areas of the buildings. So, again, I want to get your feedback, you know, talk to your departments about it, and let me know what you think about it, and then we can either move forward on that or not, and what people think. So, and that was it. So Jay is up next. She's going to update us on enrollment for the spring semester. Hopefully it's looking better than what I heard last time.
Thanks, Dan. Yes, spring enrollment ended up better, but still overall about 3.5% down year over year. Although that was kind of to be expected because we started the fall 3.5% down, and it's very difficult to make up that number of students from the fall to the spring. The good news is fall to spring retention did slightly improve from fall 15 to spring 16 versus fall 14 to spring 15, so that was kind of the positive note. New spring students with transfers was fairly close to where it was the previous year, where we are noticing kind of a slight drop this spring was on reentry students, students who had attended Western previously and came back. There were fewer of those students coming back this time around, but we think that's procedural because there were kind of changes made to that matriculation status a few years ago, which I think have worked its way through the system, so we're now returning probably to more normal reentry numbers. Fall currently is nothing but positive news right now. Fall applications, and currently now it's about 99% of the fall applications are freshmen. Transfer students typically apply a little later on. We're up about 10% year over year. Admitted students, so freshmen that we've offered acceptances to, are up about 45% year over year. So we've admitted 45 more students on this date than we did at this previous date last year out of a larger applicant pool. So you kind of draw the lines on the map there. And the real great news is confirmation, so deposits. So students who have put down dollars and said, I want to come to Western, is actually up 100% today versus where it was a year ago on the same date. So it's all very positive news. But I want to remind everybody that it's March 17th, and we have a long way to go until the
February
May 1.
17th.
I'm sorry, February, yeah. Woo! If it was March, then I'd be panicked. February, I feel much better. We can all go home now. And we're pushing our first-time, first-year students to make a commitment by May 1. May 1 is the nationally agreed-upon campus response date. This is something that all, particularly four-year public private schools, agree upon when freshmen are going to make their decisions, and then are going to essentially get out of the pool and take themselves out of contention. Our goal this year is to get that first-time, first-year student number up as high as possible by May 1, because in reality, in your heads, you're thinking, oh, we still got May, June, July, August. Actually, freshmen, we only probably get about 5% more of freshmen after that date. It's really just transfers that point on. So whatever that May 1 freshman number is pretty much where we're going to end up come the end of August, and it's very predictable about what's going to happen at that point. So what I'm coming to the, and I know Dr. Murray referenced this at a meeting back in November, is we'd really like to go out this year and solicit volunteers from the academic side of the house, from faculty, to make calls to admitted students. We'll do it by program. We'll do it in manageable numbers. It's a volunteer basis, so if you want to do it, it's great. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. We'll try to keep the numbers manageable, and we'll work with folks on answering the questions, giving them cheat sheets. But for those of you with high school age students, you can argue whether or not a call from a school has an impact. It does have a positive impact with a student. Where it really has an impact is when mom and dad pick up the phone. Nothing speaks more highly of us than have, hi, is Johnny home? Oh, is this Johnny's mom? Well, this is Dr. X from Western Connecticut State University. And that's kind of the thing with the impact we want to have. We're targeting doing this sometime in late March, early April, after financial aid packages are on the street, before Accepted Student Day happens, to continue to keep this momentum, because when you're up where we are right now, we'd really like to continue to stay up. Anyone who is interested or knows if anyone's interested, they can contact Enrollment Services directly. Myself or my assistant, Kathy Nostrom, will take your names and hand you hold your hand through the process, because it's going to be cool, it's going to be easy, it's going to be neat. We'll make it fun, but you know, I think we want to be in this together. I want to solicit your support.
One thing you might think about is actually, when you drop your script for us to follow,
yes,
is to actually push it out to the departments. So don't wait until we all come to you and say, hey, Jay, I want to do this, or someone else wants to do it. Why don't you just send it out to all the departments and all the chairs when you're ready for that,
okay,
ready with that, and then also give us the contact information from, you know, for students.
Yes, we'll absolutely do that.
It's easier if you push it out rather than waiting for us to come to you.
Well, what I'll do, that's a good suggestion. So what I'll do is we'll prepare, and I'm going to, for the enrollment subcommittee for next week, we're going to finalize the draft of the kind of script and talking points. Then we'll push that out to solicit things, and then we'll pair up because the list is it's dynamic, it keeps changing. So I want to do it once to make sure we have up to date information, because I don't want to send you a kid who's already said yes in the time I sent it to you. Okay, sound good?
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
So I invited Jane Gates to come and speak to us about the response of the administration to the Student Success Retention Task Force report that Tom chaired last year. And Jane emailed me about an hour ago and said there's something going on campus. She can't be here yet, but when she is here, we'll go ahead and ask her to come up and give us her response. So next we have George Claffey, and George is our interim CIO. And I asked George to come to speak with us for two reasons. One is just to say hello, introduce himself to us, and secondly, to talk about the printer policy issue we discussed at our last meeting.
Hi, nice to meet you all. I know I've met some of you in person. Look forward to meeting the rest of you over the next 30 days or so. I'm George Claffey. I'm the interim CIO. I'll just give you a quick background on me. I've spent the last 17 years at Charter Oak State College and at the Connecticut Distance Learning Consortium. So I've been part of this sort of CSU system since before it was a CSU system. Prior to that, I was in the K-12 science and technology for about 7 or 8 years. So I started sort of at the front of the classroom doing K-12 classes, began working in administration, later became an adjunct at Central in their MIS department, while also serving as the CIO. So hopefully That'll be an interesting experience that I can bring here, both serving from the administrative side and then also, I think, as the practitioner side. So I talked to Dan a little bit earlier. It was almost, I think, my first week I got here. And this printer issue had come up, and I was looking for some backup data and some documents.
I don't hold back.
Fair enough. And so we talked, and we looked around in IT and I. We talked to ITC. Unfortunately, Kit Hinga has been out, so we haven't been able to get as much data. But we can't find a good policy document that talks about prints. And so I think that the best course of action right now is to continue working with the process procedure guideline that we had when we started the semester or prior to whenever this change was going to be implemented, and continue to supply these inkjet printers and the cartridges for you throughout the rest of the budget year. At the same time, I've talked to the IT and I folks, and they've said, look, you know, the printers we're putting on the desk, you know, they break, they require a lot of maintenance, the ink is somewhat troublesome, it's expensive to maintain. And so simultaneously, we're going to begin piloting an initiative where we're putting sort of value-based laser printers out. And so we've talked to Dan. He's going to help me find some names of some pilot faculty. But across the next 6 months, we're going to pilot an initiative that puts a higher quality but lower cost across 5 years device at your desk. We're also going to begin working in concert with the facilities department, who handles copiers and things like that, and talk to them about where it is that we have these multifunction devices. I come from an organization that had a very successful implementation of multifunction devices. Each of them, you know, provided color, they stapled, they faxed, they could route things to your email. We made an institutional investment in many of these devices to live in various areas that were easy to access. And so as I begin to learn more about sort of what the technology is here, we can create more of a plan that's operational that says, okay, let's have a 3 or 4 year strategy as we begin moving to digital paper, as we begin looking at changing technologies, what is it that we can continue to do? So in the status quo, we'll keep pronouncing, you can plan onto your inkjets or whatever you have. We'll begin piloting the lasers for sort of this 3 year replacement. We'll begin looking at where the placement is of multifunction devices more strategically and sort of less from a commodity standpoint. And I think if we're going to begin an initiative, it's going to begin on the administration side. So you'll see people, Dr. Clark, myself, and whatever, we'll be the first people that are removing our desk jet printers or laser printers from our offices and moving to this sort of multifunction technology. So that's sort of our strategy.
So George is committed to working through the ITC and through the Senate to work to develop these policies and this sort of long-term plan. And it's terrific. So I do appreciate that. Are there any questions? Senator Ryan.
End of the 3 year period, if it should go as planned, how much would you expect to save?
Those numbers, I don't have a good sense. As far as I can tell you today, ITC has a lot of data about cost per print for things that we provide. And once it gets outside the IT&I, so it goes in the, you know, business office or facilities, we get into paper and toner and service contracts, we're blind to that. And I think that's why we want to take a pause and really have a collective institutional strategy that says how we do this. We can all agree, just from what we buy at Staples, that, you know, printing cartridges at home is more expensive than printing on a giant Xerox here or even bringing it to FedEx if it was, you know, economical or near your house. So where can we bring that strategy locally? There's also a concept, where are we going to be with end user devices? Will we, you know, you can already see there's a lot of tablets and portable computers. We've got many projects in the pipeline, DegreeWorks and other things that are going to reduce our emphasis on physical paper. So it's tough to predict 3 years out from where we go, but certainly we want to see that there's good ROI on making whatever change. And again, that's more a reason to go slower and make these changes as we're modifying. You know, as cable guys are running infrastructure, it's easier to pull another drop than to pull them in to do a special thing. And so that's we want to get out of the one-off sort of position.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you, George.
Thank you very much.
Any other announcements? OK. Okay, let's go ahead to the unfinished business, and the first thing on the agenda is the e-device policy, which we've discussed many times here. So Matt, do you want to come up? And as you recall, last semester we made a motion to pass this, and we decided to hold off until you all had a chance to talk to your departments about this device, e-device policy. So go ahead, Matt.
Great. So thank you very much for having me here today to talk about this. Hopefully now everyone has had a chance to discuss this proposed policy with your departments, and I think the folks can vote on this now, right? Are any questions?
Yes, the motion's been made, so now we'll open to discussion, questions, etc.
Nursing department has a question in regards to the proposal for policy that it is each instructor's responsibility to establish a policy. So it's still very broad, so each of us will be preparing individual policies, how to implement the
correct
devices.
Correct.
That sounds very broad for us. Can you clarify this more? Where can we go farther with this to get more clarification?
There actually was a member of your department on the committee, and part of this policy was designed to accommodate some of the nursing department's concerns about this. So part of it was to allow each individual instructor, presumably if necessary within the confines of their the discussions their department has had about this, to craft a policy about what is acceptable or not as it pertains to e-devices. Knowing that, for instance, in nursing, presumably there's concerns at times about recording of lectures or discussions or whatever. So we meant this to be broad and flexible for that reason.
Yeah, many of us already have policies in place. I do for my classroom now, so it's just a matter of making sure I write it down and it's in the actual syllabus. So they're not asking for us to have a detailed policy, it's 5-10 pages long, it's something that just summarizes what you're gonna, what your students can do and cannot do in your classroom with your RD devices. Are there any more questions? Okay, hearing none, let's go ahead and take a vote. All those in favor of the policy, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you very much. So Matt, you have one more agenda item here, and then we discussed last semester also requiring departments to have a statement of some sort of advising, and a motion was, again, was made last semester, and we asked you to go back and get feedback from your departments about this. So go ahead, Matt.
So exactly, if you recall, there was discussion about the statement of academic advising. I believe that the original motion had a requirement that each department provide a statement of academic advising by a certain date, and also include a bunch of criteria that would be required of the departments. The motion separated those two, and this one is simply requiring that the departments provide a statement of advising by May 16th.
Are there any questions, discussion? Senator Schlicht.
Where is this statement, or who, to whom is this statement?
I don't recall we specified that.
So how do we fulfill this obligation?
Actually, I believe, if I recall, someone correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that it was that that the departments provide a statement to their deans, right? Correct me if I'm not thinking about this correctly. I think it was intended to provide a statement to their respective deans.
Yeah, it's not actually in the resolution itself, but we discussed several options. That was one of them.
But at the moment, the resolution
doesn't specify. So, keep in mind also, we did direct this new committee, this AAR committee, to develop more information, more details about what this statement advising will be will look like. But for now, we left it vague to allow that committee to itself spend time thinking about this in more detail and developing recommendations.
Yeah, I think the policy was to go to the committee because you were going to look at those policies to form something that was.
Yes, thank you for jumping jogging my memory. Yes, that's true.
So we're saying, when I asked my chair to do this, what I'm saying is send that policy to the chair of the student committee.
That's what it was.
And it would work.
Okay. That we hasn't been handled, right?
It will be stirred shortly. Senator Lieber, if you could.
I was under the impression that we're going to the dean ultimately.
Well, we could modify the resolution right now and clarify this if you like.
Sure.
Okay.
Do you want to go to the dean or the chair of the committee?
What's your preference?
Shouldn't we go to both?
You can make a motion, so whichever, wherever you want to go.
Am I amending the motion or?
Yes, we can amend it.
Amend the motion that copies be sent to the dean and the chair of the committee.
What was your amendment?
Copies be sent to both the dean and the chair of the committee.
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Just a question.
Senator Lieber.
Yeah, so would each department still be provided with a recommended policy before having to submit their own?
At this point, the answer is no.
Okay.
This committee will develop those recommendations. At this point, just say last year decided just leave it generic for now.
Okay.
Could be one sentence, could be two sentences, could be a page at this point.
Okay.
This is a new committee going to be called? The
Academic Advisement Administration Committee. Academic Advisement. Okay, so we have an amendment on the floor. Any more discussion? Okay, let's have a vote. All those in favor of the amendment to the resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so now it's been amended. Is there any discussion, further discussion about the amended resolution? Hearing none, let's take a vote on that then. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, so the ayes have it. Thank you, Senator Debrus. Next on the agenda are two items from Dean Alexander. The first one has to do with the DEC forms. We discussed this at an earlier meeting. And you were all given two versions to ask your departments to give you feedback on.
Remind you that I brought to you the combined form for the DEC process, the graduation process. The reason that I did so is because in the School of Arts and Sciences, I observed that many times people put the wrong form in. There are three in the handbook, and they all serve the same function. So there wasn't enough of a distinction between them to allow them to be selected properly. So I thought it might be easier to have them all be the same. The second problem was that when you are a tenured faculty member applying for promotion, you have an undocumented practice permissible in the CBA to say, and now your next professional assessment can be in 6 years. If you don't know to ask for it, if somebody loses the letter or the memo when you ask for it, you could have to go through a professional assessment the very next year. So those were the motivations for this. Mm-hmm. Last month, two things came up. One was about clarifying the language about that professional assessment timeline. So I went and copied from the CBA what is exactly there, and then put Western follows this policy. So that was one change. The other change is one in which I have no preference, and I leave it to the wisdom of the rest of you. There were in the evaluation for non-tenured annual evaluations, there are three categories. right? Satisfactory, marginal, and unsatisfactory. At the professional assessment of tenured faculty members, there was merely satisfactory or unsatisfactory. So the two versions only have that difference. You can either keep it as separate categories or determine that it would be better to have the three categories for both evaluations. I have no preference, either one is acceptable. My main goal was one form. So I, you know, brought it to the attention of my chairs again yesterday, and I said, just come and vote for whichever one you want. But I have no preference.
So there's a motion on the table to pass one of these versions. And is there a discussion, questions? Senator Debrus.
At sort of the last minute, a question came up in the among the Department of Social Sciences about the red line. It is recommended that a copy of your departmental evaluation criteria also be
yes.
The attached.
Yes.
And the question was essentially why that was being added there.
It's on some of the forms and not on the others, so I highlighted it. But also people, the wisdom of the committee actually suggested to me that what happens, and people on promotion and tenure have mentioned this to me, that every discipline is different in their evaluations, you know, particularly what they count as research, what they expect, that's where the biggest variation is. So if you clue in P&T, they might evaluate properly. But, you know, that's, and again, I think it was on one and not on the other.
Great.
So that's why it's there.
Thank you.
But it's suggested, it's not.
Great, thank you.
Yes.
Certainly.
A question that came up in our department was, how would you qualify marginal?
Right.
So, is there...
That I leave to all of you. How do you do it on the tenure evaluation? You know, the untenured.
I don't know. I'm certainly in favor of having consistency with three categories. It's just the marginal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a different way of putting it, perhaps.
Needs improvement?
Perhaps.
That sounds like fourth grade.
Like really going to help somebody out in tenure, like, well, you know.
Keep working.
At least two categories for tenure.
Full disclosure, in my chair's meeting yesterday, there was division, right? And again, since I have no agenda here other than one forum, I leave it to all of you. But there were two very good things observed. Observation one was, peers are not likely to choose unsatisfactory psychologically. So they thought it might be better to have it as an option if they were worried about something. Observation two was, we have no way to remediate it, so what's the point? So both are really good observations, and that's why I say I don't, you know.
So we have two versions, so which version do you want? One has marginal as a third category for the professional assessment, and one does not have that category added on professional assessment. And that's the difference between the two forms.
I like yes, no. I like the two options. No marginal.
Well, we can't take it away from the other one, right? It already exists there, so.
Might the most expedient way to handle this would be to vote on the one that has the marginal first. If that's approved, then we don't have to vote on the next one. But if it's not approved, then we have to vote on the next one.
We could. I just want to see if there's any feedback at all about either form. Something's very much here. So we could put it to a vote. If there are no more questions, Senator Hawkins.
Including the option of marginal does not require that a department use it. So if a department would rather have a yes, no decision, that department could consistently choose that option. Another department might prefer to have marginal in the case of someone who's been recently hired and might need to remediate somewhat.
So I just want to clarify, though.
Enter another category. So another department could choose to include marginal as an option. I think it gives us more flexibility to leave it.
I just want to be clear, though, of the difference between the two forms, right? One of them has marginal only for non-tenure. The other one has marginal for both. There's not one version of the form that doesn't have marginal for non-tenure.
Is there other discussion? Chris, so I was going to vote, and why don't we, I think that would be a good suggestion, Jeff, why don't we vote for the one that adds marginal to the professional assessment category? And then we'll see how we vote on that, and then go from there. All's in favor of making that change. So it's a new form with all the changes in it, including adding marginal to the professional assessment evaluation. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Nay.
Okay, so the ayes have it. In which case, there's no need to vote on the second one. Second version. So Missy has one more agenda item.
That's a very good point.
Back to the degree definitions. The only difference between the documents you have now and the one that I introduced last month is that I was asked if I might take out the word normally, so I have. Everything else is the same.
Again, I made a motion last time, so now we're up for discussion, questions.
Thinking of our specific example in cell on the business side, when we look at normally 30 to 39 credit hours in nature, that has to, for us, include a core curriculum in business that students are required to take. Because most of our majors don't quite hit 30 hours, or am I wrong?
I'm sorry?
Most of the majors in business don't quite hit 30 hours. In marketing or most of the disciplines. So would that be acceptable to include in the definition of major?
Well,
or does it have to be discipline specific?
So as I looked at it, David, the BBA includes all of those courses.
Right.
The core and the rest of it. So in chemistry, there's the foundation courses, and then there's the full specialization. But you can't get the degree without it. So there is no such thing as a marketing major without that. So the whole major is actually inclusive.
As long as we understand, I'm comfortable.
Right.
Any other questions? Discussion? Okay. Go ahead and take a vote. That's also in favor of this resolution, which changes the faculty handbook's definition of degrees. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Two successes in one day.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
If I've created a pileup, we'll find out quick and we'll fix it.
Is there any other unfinished business? So let's move on to the new business, and we actually can't address this today, and the reason is that Katie had a conflict, Katie of Callahan had a conflict. Oops, you know what, sorry, I forgot one thing. Yeah. Thank you. The other Katie has one more issue here, so Katie, why don't you come on up. Katie, ahead of myself.
Hi. Given George's feedback on the ITI policy, I'd like to make a motion to postpone this issue indefinitely.
Second. So what that does, essentially, it kills the resolution without actually having a vote on it. And if at some point we decide we want to bring it back on, we can actually bring it back to the agenda at a later date. This allows us to just say, you know what, forget about it for now, we don't need it, but we don't actually have to vote either yes or no for the resolution, which is why she's proposing this now. So we have a motion and a second. Is there a discussion? Okay, all those in favor of postponing this indefinitely, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now moving on to new business. Katie O'Callaghan thought she could make it, wasn't quite sure about the timing, and she's not here yet. And neither is Jess House, her dean. So we have nobody to present these two degrees she's going to speak to today. So we have to wait and do those at our next meeting in March. Is there any other new business? Okay, so it's adjourned. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
How do we do that? We make a motion?
I don't know how you adjourn a meeting. our parliamentary isn't here, so I can't even ask him anything. Why don't we just reconvene? So I'm gonna call this meeting back to order. How's that? To deal with our other new business. So Kate, why don't you come on up, please, and speak to us about these two degree proposals.
We can identify. So send me an email.
This is a little shorter. First of all, I apologize. I need a clone. I was doing the Teach Live session at the same time, and I have to go back. So I apologize. This is a very quick Senate. But what I'm presenting today are a proposal for two new graduate programs. Just to give you a little background, the Connecticut State Department of Education has proposed a new regulation regarding master's programs, and only certain areas will count for professional certification. Our current MS Ed programs would not count under these pending regulations. So we had to act very fast to make sure that we had viable programs in the near future. So that's rationale number one. Rationale number two, the current MS Ed programs do not lead to any new certification area. We are one of the few CSCUs that has that situation. Central, Southern, they offer special ed, they offer reading. We do not, and that's always been a recruitment problem. So what I gave you the shortened version that I just handed out. The first program is for a reading specialist program, and it's 36 credits. It's for teachers that have their initial certification and are going for the certificate number 102, which is remedial reading language arts. If they continue with us for tier two for an additional 9 credits, they can be a district administrator in literacy. So they get 2 certificates, not just 1. So not only would this count under the new reg, so it counts for the professional certification, but they get more certificates, so it makes them more marketable. And then we have the Holy Grail on page 5, which is special ed, all right? So this would be, again, for anyone who is initially certified, and for 36 credits, if they pass the certification exam and they complete the program, they would have a new certificate title in special ed, which we currently do not have. And I can't tell you how many phone calls I get every single day for special ed. So that's the elevator speech, very quick, on why we're proposing these new graduate programs.
So I'll go through these one by one since there are two there. And is there a motion to pass these, to approve the special education degree?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
You have the language in front of you. Resolved that the University Senate approved the Master's in Education, Special Education. It's been made and seconded. Is there a discussion? Questions? Senator Murray.
Yeah. On the MS in Education Reading Specialist Program, page 2.
What are going to be special education first? There are two proposals.
Page 5.
The first one is special education. Senator Schlicht.
What are the staffing requirements of this new proposal? Do the current faculty that you have in place now, are they able to handle this without new hires?
And we're just talking about the literacy one first, right?
No,
special education first.
The literacy, we're fine. I'm a literacy specialist, Darla Shaw. We have others in the program, in the department. For the special ed, we are requesting one new hire for that. Because we do have people in the department. For instance, Janet Burke is special ed certified, but she's now fully involved in the ABA. So one new hire is requested for that. However, this is a revenue-generating, both of them are renovating, revenue-generating programs.
What's ABA? Point of information.
ABA is Applied Behavioral Analysis.
Any further questions on special education?
Please.
Okay, so let's go back to your departments, and we'll come back in March and vote on this resolution. Let's go on to the second proposal from Katie. Can I get a motion to approve the Masters of Literacy? Okay, and that's seconded. So that's resolved that the Lane University Senate approve the Masters in Literacy and Language. Are there any questions about this proposal? Senator Murray.
Page 2. Second from the bottom, XXX, exploring children's and adolescent literature and digital literacies. The English department already teaches children and adolescents literature. Are we going to be teaching this for you?
That would be great. Yeah, that would be great. It has to have the digital literacies piece with it, because when I designed both of these programs, I designed them for accreditation. So the International Literacy Association, which used to be the International Reading Association, now it's the ILA, requires digital literacies. And so this course would be targeting that as well as the, so we can definitely, if this is approved, follow up on that, definitely.
Is there a rubric for the requirements to digital literacies?
There's standards for it. And then our assessment system, like in the full packet that's in SharePoint, at the very end, I put in what would be the key assessments for both programs, because we designed it by looking at what are the performance assessments that they would need as completers of this program. And then we'll design the rubrics based on those key assessments.
And same question for EdXX Sociolinguistics.
Yes, that again is a specific requirement for ILA, for all literacy specialists. So this is a specially designed course just for the ILA requirements.
Thank you.
Any more questions, discussion? Okay, so once again, let's take this back to our departments, and we'll come back in March and vote on that resolution. And if it's possible, we are going to re-adjourn. Thank you.